This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hello and welcome to this week's No Never podcast. I'm your host, James Bird. No Natalie Bromwear was this week. She thinks that skiing in France is more important than both watching Burnley and talking about him on the internet. So instead, I've got Andrew Greaves with me and Daniel Bentley, who's one of the co-founders of No Never way back when. First up, Newcastle game to talk about last Wednesday. A 1-1 draw, a decent point, I guess, for the Claretts. But it wasn't a great performance from either side. Dan, what did you think of the game as a whole? A bit of a slow one, really.
Yeah, it was a drab affair. They're a tough team to play against, and it's a tough place to go and play, St. James Park. It's an intimidating atmosphere for the away fans and for the away side. So to get anything out of going up north is an achievement in this league. They're not the team that they were several years ago, but they're still a tough team. They've got an excellent manager, some talented young players. So, end of the game, especially when you score late on and get an equaliser, that sort of, it doesn't feel exactly like a win, but it's the way the scoreline falls sometimes. If you score first and then you end up getting a draw at the end, you can feel disappointed, but scraping a draw at the death, it's a good feeling. It's not the same as a win, but not too many complaints. Especially, we're discussing two games today, and we'll discuss City in detail. But this isn't a game that we should dwell on for. Well, Burnley fans shouldn't dwell on for too long. There wasn't a big missed opportunity. Got something out of it, can't complain.
Yeah, I agree with that from Daniel. I think, you go up there and you think, right, if you get a point, quite happy. Looking at the run we've been on, we've had City, United, Liverpool, Spurs in this kind of really sticky run. Newcastle, intimidating place. They've not been on the best run themselves. Not an easy place to go. I think, yeah, you just take it on the chin, take a nice 1-1. And I think you get that momentum from, getting a late winner or a late equaliser. It's completely different to, the demoralising effect of conceding late on like we've had a few times. So, yeah, I'm relatively happy with that. I think, if you can win your own games, draw your away games, then you're going to do all right.
I think it's a good point, actually. Anything late on in a game that's in your team's favour almost makes it automatically feel like a win. There's nothing quite like that last gasp sort of robbery of a team that looked like they were getting a result. It was the first time I've been to St. James's Park, and I think it's a good point to make that it is quite it's got an air about it, even though Newcastle obviously aren't the team that they were in years gone by. There's still good support there. The fans, I thought, were really good, got behind them. Just the size of the stadium, I think, probably makes it quite an intimidating place for away teams to come and play. I'm sure it's not what affected Phil Bardsley, but another poor performance, I thought, from the right back. He's one who's, I think, definitely become the scapegoat for the fans, but he's given away a penalty. It's a really poor challenge, I think. It's rash. He jumps in, and he never really had a chance of winning the ball in that area. In fact, if anything, the player's running it out of play, and he's probably best just trying to shepherd him away from the penalty box. Nick Pope makes a great save to keep keep the goal, keep the game goalless. But Andrew, what did you think of both Phil Bardsley conceding the penalty and obviously the Nick Pope save?
Yeah, I think Nick's made a good save. You know, I think he said it was his first penalty save since he was on loan at Bury a good few years ago, or at Bury a good few years ago. So, you know, it kind of adds to his repertoire, if you will. He's turning into a very fine goalkeeper. We don't concede very many, City and Spurs aside. But yeah, like you say, player of Bardsley's experience to give away that penalty, I thought it was a bit rash. But I do think Bardsley kind of lives on that edge a little bit. I think if you look at, if you get a YouTube compilation of all the times Bardsley's either been sent off, been booked for a foul, given away a penalty or given away a free kick in a dangerous area, I think you'll see a pattern emerging. He's just that kind of player. But like you say, he's become a bit of a scapegoat for a few sections of the fans. But I think he's done all right since he came in, if I'm really honest. I think, he's that workmanlike performer that Dyche knows if he's called upon will always kind of give 100%. Perhaps sometimes his enthusiasm pushes him over that line a little bit. And I was saying after the Stoke game, that horrible, turgid, wet, windy, damp 1-0, that the only person I think in the whole stadium will have enjoyed that would be Phil Bardsley, because he's that kind of player.
Dan, have you got anything to add on Phil Bardsley's general performance and giving away the penalty?
Yeah, I mean, Andrew makes a good point there about Bardsley, and that he's great in those situations where you're playing a Stoke and you need a workmanlike player at right back. But since then, we've played a lot of teams that play with a bit more flair, pace on the wings, and he struggles against teams like that. And I'm sorry, I'm one of the people that's been scapegoating him. He hasn't impressed me really at all since he came in, and I've been crying out for Lawton to come back in since he's been fit. And obviously now Bardsley's injured, and that's been forced on Dyche, but I really haven't seen why Dyche has been kept with him as long as he has. Very, very poor for the penalty. I think we're better now that Loughton's back inside. Obviously, we don't have a solid backup there, but it sometimes those decisions, those things get forced on you. And I'm looking forward to seeing more Matt Loughton.
I think it's a fair point to make that Phil Bardsley is a signing in the summer when I think most fans obviously expect us to be in the bottom half of the table. Maybe it makes more sense than it does now, where we find ourselves where we are. He's workmanlike, I think, as Dash put it before. He's got a manliness about him. And I think if we were battling it out at the bottom of the table, the sort of way he plays might be suiting us more. But now we've sort of elevated our game a little bit. I think we just left looking a little bit for a little bit more. I don't think he's anywhere near as good going forward as Lawton is, but we'll definitely get onto that with the City game. And he just picks up a lot of cards, and I think he has the rash challenge in him. He's done okay in a few games, but I think there's been a couple of goals now that he's been to blame for, and that penalty would have been won if it hadn't been for Nick Pope's heroics. But obviously, I don't want to put too much scorn on the guy now he's injured, and it almost feels a little bit harsh. Moving on to bad defending from someone other than Phil Bardsley, the Newcastle goal, Kevin Long loses his man and leaves a pretty easy header, to be honest. I think Kevin Long's been an interesting one because he's come in for Tarkowski when he's been unavailable, and I think he's played pretty okay, but he's one that some fans like to give a little bit of stick to, I think, partly because obviously we didn't sign another centre-half, and that's a bit of a sore point for many Clarets. In the main, he's been pretty good, I think. Andrew, what have you thought about Kevin Long? And obviously, it's disappointing he's let his man go there. But I mean, on the whole, he's not been awful.
I think he's a bit of a typical Dyche player, really, in that he does divide opinion a little bit. I really like Longy. I think he's always done all right when called upon. I think this season he's played in some of the biggest games. I think he was probably one of our best players away at Man United, maybe at Old Trafford. He's played against some big teams, and yes, against Newcastle he did lose his man. There is that perhaps rustiness to him that he's been here 8-9 years, whatever it is, and only played a handful of games. He's not used to playing in the Premier League in you know, week in, week out, a bit like Tarkowski towards the end of last season, I guess, or the Tarkowski. His schooling, his background's probably at a slightly higher level than Kevin's, because a lot of his games, don't forget, have been on loan at the likes of Rochdale and Portsmouth and Accrington Stanley in League Two. So to raise your game consistently, and by consistently I don't mean every game, but kind of to be at that level every time you're called upon, and sometimes there may be 10, 12 games between call-ups for the first team starting 11. I think it shows, there's certainly a degree of ability there to be able to kind of, relatively seamlessly come into a side that, isn't conceding very many and really hold your own. And perhaps we didn't necessarily see that against Newcastle, lost his man for the goal. Certainly against City, again, I thought he was superb against City, against arguably a better group of players in De Bruyne and Bernardo Silva and Aguero, who really didn't get too much of a sniff at goal.
Yeah, I think that's definitely fair to say. Dan, what do you think about Long? Do you think it's just, he's settling in a little bit like Tarkowski was doing towards the end of last season, and that these sort of mistakes where he's lost his man, that's bound to happen as he sort of gains his confidence a little bit in playing first-team Premier League football?
Yeah, I mean, Long's a weird one for me because, he's obviously been around a long time at the club, but, been under the radar for a lot of that. He was signed by Owen Coyle. He's our longest tenured player at this point. And, he's 27 years old now. And you'd maybe hope that he'd progressed a little more. But he's obviously done enough to stay around the squad. So it's one of those things. He's going to be a perennial backup substitute. Backup centre-back for his time at Burnley, at least, because he's not a standout Premier League quality central defender like Tarks and Ben Mee have shown themselves to be. So useful to have in the squad. Will make mistakes because he just doesn't have as much high-level experience as the other lads at his position. I put more blame on the board for not getting a central defender over the line when they knew Tarks was injured. And I know we're sniffing around Worrell and Forrest wanted 20 million and we were like, see you then. But we should have had a couple of options there that should have kept us a bit more on solid footing for the rest of the season.
Yeah, I think Kevin's been quite unlucky in the way that because he's always been sort of just needed as backup, he's not necessarily had the loan opportunities he maybe needed to push on and develop a little bit. And I think sometimes that shows, he's played very, very little football in the last 8 years. But as Andrew said, he stays around the team. He's clearly been good enough to not be shipped out. He's falling down the pecking order when Tarkowski came in, but that's to be expected. I think Tarkowski obviously a really, really good centre half. But as you said there, Dan, I think the real disappointment is that we didn't manage to get someone in. I assume from what's how Dash works that maybe there wasn't someone available who sort of fitted what he wants at the club. And I think having listened to the podcast he did with Joey Barton, where he talked a lot about what he looks for in players, maybe that is it. And maybe there's just not someone on the market that's the right fit for the club at the time. And hopefully that's something we'll get sorted in the summer, because it's clear that, particularly with the centre-half position where it's so easy to pick up cards and suspensions, it's really important that we get someone in.
Yeah, I think one of the things to remember, though, is that Dyche has had a number of transfer windows to get rid of Kevin Long. And there's never really, from what we understand, been a desire to get Kevin out of the club, if you will. So I think you're right. I think Dyche clearly sees something in him. And, a number of managers, don't forget, from Coyle, we've had Laws, we've had Howe, we've had Dyche, and he's got new, it's not like, Dyche signed him on a 10-year contract and it'd be too expensive to get rid of him. He signed new contracts under different managers, and there's obviously something about him that those managers see that you know, because we don't see training every day, that they think, actually, this lad's, you know, fairly capable of stepping up. I do think it's a balancing act. I do agree with Dice. I got a bit of stick on Twitter, but I do agree with Dice that there's no point in bringing in, you know, somebody who's just a casual backup. Because most players don't want to come. You know, not everyone's got the patience of Tarkowski or, you know, Keane when he came to kind of see the bigger picture. And I also agree that we shouldn't have paid, you know, huge money for those players. You know, I'm probably in the minority who says that, yeah, you know what, I'm quite happy where we are. We've been on this very sticky run and we're still seventh. You know, that's the thing to remember. And still fairly comfortably in that position. You know, a little bit up and down maybe, but we're comfortable in that position having got out of this sticky run. So I'd definitely like to see a new centre-half in the summer. Probably two centre halves in the summer. I think we probably should have picked one up in the last two windows, but you know, you've got to get that right mix, and clearly Dash's teams work with that kind of really fine balance between, you know, ego and teamwork, and maybe there isn't anyone at this moment aside from Holding and Worrell who fitted that bill.
I think it's key to remember that sometimes maybe fans forget picking up a player is not really like walking to Tesco and you know, getting a loaf of bread for the week. It's just not, they're not quite that available, particularly not when you've got the set of criteria that Dash has probably got for the individual as well as the player as a player. Just the last thing on the Newcastle game to talk about, our equaliser. Obviously, great to see some at so last minute, as we said before. It's like coming away with a win almost. But do you think it's harsh, Dan, that it's being given to Darlow as an own goal rather than to Sam Vokes, when really it's, you know, it was always going in, it's come off the bar and hit the keeper, and really you should just probably give it to the striker. The keeper definitely doesn't want that against his name, does he?
Yeah, I mean, the thing is Vokes is not in the golden boot running. So Vokes will take confidence from it. He'll know that he made the move and scored the goal. It doesn't matter really what goes in the record books, I don't think, unless you had a couple of quid on at the bookies.
Andrew, what do you reckon? Do you think it should be given to the striker or the keeper as an own goal in that sort of situation?
Yeah, I think they get a bit too obsessed with the dubious goals panel, kind of making it, you know, saying, oh, it's Darlow's own goal. Like, you know, I was talking to your dad about this on Sunday morning. No goalkeeper wants an Oggy next to their name. So, like Dan said, though, I think, you know, Sam Vokes knows it's his goal. You know, it's kind of, he's falling backwards, he's Darlow. So Darlow's not keeping that ball out. You know, if Darlow's not there, it probably bounced on the line and in. So, yeah, I'd give it to Sam Vokes, but I don't think anyone will be losing too much sleep over it whatsoever.
Yeah, I think you know, the way he's falling backwards, having made the initial save, he doesn't really know a lot about it, and there's, you know, no chance he's getting out of the way of it. So, for me, definitely give it to the striker. So moving on from the Newcastle game to the City game, I think really the highlight of the podcast, the one everyone was probably going to want to talk about. Really hard fought point to come away against the team who were obviously running away with the league and looked every bit the team that should be winning the league. Andrew, do you think we were good value for the point?
Yeah, I thought we were very good value. I think, you know, Dice described it perfectly well in the press conference afterwards about that kind of, you know, if you stay in a game like that against a team like that, you know, you do deserve whatever you'll get. You know, there's a hell of a lot of teams out there who've been, you know, on the wrong side of a spanking by Manchester City in the league. And, you know, I think it's to our credit that, you know, with the injuries that we've got, and, you know, we're not just talking Tarkowski, but talking about the wider picture, you know, to still be in that game and really not, you know, possession aside, that much, you know, there wasn't that much in it in the way of chances. You know, Pope perhaps had the shot from De Bruyne straight down his throat and the one from Danilo. But if you look at the chances we had, Ben Mee had two good chances. Perhaps, you know, if that first one, the volley, falls to a Jeff Hendrick or, you know, anybody other than a central defender, not wanting to, you know, do Ben Mee out of a living. But, you know, you almost think he makes it more difficult for the goalkeeper. And then the sensational save from Edison, from Lennon. Chances wise, you know, I know City had more chances and, you know, more shots on target. It was fairly routine. I'd say, compared to the chances we had. So, yeah, definitely good value. I think, you know, again, picking up that point late on, 82nd minute, 83rd minute, whatever it was, I think he's really kind of good for the momentum going forward into the Swansea game.
I think it was an interesting game in that sense, actually. While it was a 1-1, there was a lot more chances in the game than the scoreline would probably suggest. Dan, what did you think about the way we went about the game?
I thought we were excellent. We're on this air quotes winless run since Stoke, but that was up there with the performances of the season. I mean, you don't get a point out of City easily at all. They're right now up there with the best in the world. They have in De Bruyne the best midfielder in the world right now, and we met them. You know, we really did meet them, and other than the Liverpool game, there won't have been many league games that City played this season that will prove as difficult as coming to Burnley. Just all around excellent team performance, and a real Sean Dyche performance. And you know, if it stays 1-0, you've always got a chance, and that's how we play. And just did not give up, grafted. There was some excellent, it was really encouraging to see a lot of excellent movement on our part and a lot of creativity. Lennon bought a lot of that, and Goodmanson. Something about having Lennon on the other side, I don't know, it freed up Goodmanson, and he had an excellent game too. So all round, just a really fantastic performance. And like we said earlier, against pretty much any other team in the league, Burnley come out of that with 3 points.
Yeah, I think it was a massive performance against a team that, like I said, one of the best in the world easily. And, you know, you could see them winning every tournament they're involved in. I think what you mentioned there about creativity is really important as well, because obviously with Defoe out the side, I think people were worried that we were going to lose that little bit of a spot. But like you said, Lennon did step up, and we'll talk about him a little bit later on. The first goal, it's hard really to know what to say about it. It's just absolutely sensational to see a full back in that position just strike a ball so cleanly. Andrew, is there a keeper around who's keeping that out?
No, I don't think there is. I think, you know, he hits it, you know, so far away from Nick Paul. You know, it's wonderful technique. I mean, we were talking about Burnley fullbacks a little bit earlier. It is that kind of, you know, that's what that kind of money gets you. You know, if I'm going to be hypercritical, I do think he had all the space he needed to kind of take that ball under control, set his shot up. Like I say, that's being hypercritical. You know, it's the one bit where I think we were a bit slow at getting out to him. And I think if we do get out to him a bit quicker, he perhaps doesn't have time to set himself as sweetly as he did. But yeah, certainly from a goalkeeping point of view, I'm struggling, you know, to see even a De Gea or his own teammate Edison keeping that out. It's that far, that much power and that far into that corner that it looks fantastic on every replay I see, really.
I think that's a good point about the hypercriticalness. I did think at the time that we maybe gave him a little bit too much time, and I thought it was a little bit uncharacteristic for our side, since we normally like to close down pretty quick, and we did give him that moment just to tee it up. But Dan, is that the goal of the season that we've seen in a Burnley game, or...?
It was definitely spectacular. It was just one of those really jammy, not jammy, obviously. It was well-honed, crafted, straight off the training pitch, trick play. It's twice in a week now that City have come away with one of those trick play goals with De Bruyne's free kick last week as well. Give them credit for it. Fantastic goal. Not many keepers are saving that unless they're just in the right position at the right time. You can't be too disappointed, but yeah, maybe we could have closed down a bit better. Shouldn't have got all that space, got a buddy in front. But it's just not one of those things you're expecting. You're expecting it to maybe swing in and they want company to get on the end of it. So caught us off guard, and fair play to him.
Yeah, I think we've said it before on the podcast that part of what's made Burnley so successful defensively is we give people low percentage shots. So while we do face a lot of shots, they're from low percentage areas, and I'd say that's from a pretty low percentage area. So an absolutely top finish to pull it out. Obviously, we said Nick Pope's got no chance there. I thought it was another great performance from him. And the point I want to make here just is that surely even if Heaton makes it back this season now, surely it's his shirt now.
Yeah, I think Tom will know that. I think Tom's a smart enough lad and an honest enough lad to look and go, yeah, you know what, I think Pope has earned the right to to be that automatic choice. I don't think it's very dice to kind of drop Pope just because just because Heaton's back. I think Heaton's a fabulous keeper, but and I just think Pope has really stepped up. I look at the kind of the Palace game, I think it was, when he came in, he looked really nervous. He's first kick out of play and looked nervous. Then he made that save, I think it was second half, and Benteke made himself massive. And from there, he's just, he really has been a bit of a star. I think, might be critical of him at Leicester. I think he pushes the ball out to Damari Gray. But other than that, I'm struggling to see where you can fault him. And to keep the amount of clean sheets that he's kept, as somebody with no Premier League experience, I think he's, like you say, definitely earned that number one starting spot.
Yeah, I think it's important to mention how out of the blue he's come. A lot of our fans haven't really had a chance to see him, and really he was back up to a backup last season. Sort of got the performance out of him this season that we have. It's sensational. I'd say maybe for me the only criticism you could have of his play is his kicking's not quite as good as Heaton's. But I think he makes up for it with some of the saves he's made. Dan, do you reckon it'll be Pope's shirt when Heaton's back?
Yeah, I'm going to have to eat crow on this one, because I think on a podcast early in the year I was like, well, no, it's Tom Heaton's shirt. Tom Heaton is an England goalkeeper, and it's not Dyche way for you to lose your shirt just because you're injured. But because I think Heaton's injury's been so sustained for so long, I think it's actually just a case of we don't need to rush Heaton back. It's one of those things where if you did have a really dodgy backup, you'd maybe rush the rehab a bit and get them back a bit earlier. But I think with Heaton, we can just take our time, and it might take, till just before the end of the season for him to get back and fit. And so it's not going to be a huge headache when Heaton's fit. I think that's the thing. The thing we do have to worry about now is people coming in for Pope in the summer potentially, because he's shown himself to be one of the best keepers in this league, even on a pretty short sample. But he's extremely young. He's got all the attributes. Really reminds me of you think of when like De Gea came into United, and he was this lanky skinny lad. He's a lot better than when De Gea came into United. And so if he can go on to have that sort of career, he's definitely in the conversation for England.
Yeah, I think it's important to mention from that Heaton, it's maybe a case of not wanting to rush him back. Shoulder injuries, obviously, it's an area that gets a lot of abuse for goalkeepers, so not something you really want to put under strain too soon. And Nick Pope's been fantastic, and I think he'd well deserve to keep his spot. And keeping two keepers happy going forward after that could be difficult, and that might be the leverage that some teams use to try and snatch one away from us. I think one of the big things from the City game was obviously we saw Barzy go off injured, unfortunately, at half time, but that brought Matt Walton back into the team, and I think that was part of what, to me, felt like part of what made us look so much better in the second half, Andrew. I just thought Lawton was so dynamic, and teamed with Lennon switching sides, it just seemed to really click, and we saw some absolutely excellent football down that right-hand side.
Yeah, I think we touched on it earlier. I think Matty Lawton's a much more attack-minded you know, fullback. He certainly offers you a little bit more going forward. He's very strong defensively. I think, you know, there was a couple of blocks. I think he blocked from Aguero once when Aguero jinxed into the box a little bit. So, you know, both sides of his game, I think, just have a little bit, you know, a bit more calmness to it. And it's incredible ball in for Goodmanson to get the equaliser. He's halfway inside the City half and he fires that ball off. And, you know, I can't see a Bardsley doing that. It's not Bardsley's game, isn't that? But it is Loughton's game. I think it's almost, it's our game this season. You know, I think I'd like to see Charlie Taylor get himself forward a bit more. I think we saw that on Saturday. I just think with two out-and-out wingers in Goodmanson and Lennon now, as opposed to a kind of a right midfielder or a left midfielder, as I see Arfield as, rather than an actual out-and-out winger, I think having a good link-up and a good partnership with a fullback is absolutely crucial. And certainly that switch at half-time to put Lennon and Joanne on the different wings, shall I say, I think it was a bit of a masterstroke, really. And I think it just gave us that impetus, especially in that last 25 minutes.
Yeah, I thought it worked out really nicely in the second half there, and it's a fantastic cross for the goal. And as you said, there were several blocks. As soon as he came on, he started having an impact. Dan, what did you think of the difference after the change at half time?
Yeah, it was. You know, it's obviously a shame that it was as a result of an injury, but it was it just changed it completely for us. And to our best successes have been built on having the fullbacks attacking and overlapping with the wingers, and we've developed some great partnerships there. Both this season, though disrupted because of, you know, Brady being an injury, he had a great partnership going there with Ward. And we've had it in seasons past as well. And it's really been the spark of our attack. Voxy and Barnes, they're not the type of players that just pull goals out of thin air. They need service. And with the shape that we were showing in the second half, Lennon and Goodmanson and Loughton and Taylor providing, you know, some overlaps, just looked so much more of an attacking threat. And like I said, against a weaker side, they'll be putting much better balls in and getting a good couple of goals out of it.
Yeah, no, I thought it's harsh to say, but Bardsley obviously getting an injury, I hope it's not serious, I hope he's not out for a very long period, but it has opened the door to get Lawton back in, which is something that the fans were, you know, really desperate for. And I think it's paid off in the second half there. He set up the goal, it's a great cross, and I think it might just help us be a little bit more attacking in games coming forward. So to move on to someone we've sort of mentioned there anyway, Aaron Lennon, home debut. I thought in the first half he was reasonably quiet, though we did see a little glimpse where he showed Kyle Walker what he was still capable of. But second half, as soon as he switched sides, he was sensational. And I think, you know, the class he has and the teams he's played for in the past really shone through. And he's only not scored on his home debut because of a fantastic save from Edison. Dan, what did you think of Lennon's performance?
Yeah, when he sent Carl Walker to the shops, I was like, oh yeah, that's Aaron Lennon. I haven't seen a whole lot of him in recent seasons. I was like, oh yeah, no, he's a very, very good player, very pacey. Doesn't seem to have lost much of a step, if anything. Did find a lot of end product in this game, but that's very tough against a side like City. But there was just so much more of a spark. We've got a real true winger to replace Brady. Not replace Brady, but, you know, cover while Brady's out, and then we've got a lot more options on the wing. So he was fantastic, and yeah, like, great strike that was only stopped by an even greater save. But no, it's very exciting time. Very exciting. I can't wait to see what he can do against Swansea.
Yeah, I think he's the type of winger that we've not had at Turf Moor. Well, obviously, at that level ever. But for, I think he's just exactly what we've all been crying out for a while. Someone who's direct, can go at people, and has that little bit of magic in his locker to beat a man and create something. And I think against Swansea, obviously, it's going to be very interesting to see what he can do there, because it's a team who are struggling at the, you know, near the bottom end of the table. He's not playing against someone who were running away with the league. And it could, it's going to be good to see whether maybe we can score a few more goals, because that's been a bit of a problem for us this season, scoring goals. And going on to that strike he had, an Ederson save, I thought Ederson made some fantastic saves in the game. And he's probably made a real difference to the City side this year. What did you think of his performance, Dan? Because as well as making the saves, he's got that ability to play with his feet that, personally, if we had a keeper doing that at Turf Moor, it'd terrify me. But it clearly works for City, and it allows them to be so much more varied than a lot of other teams are.
Yeah, no, he's fantastic. He's very much, I think he's definitely the keeper Pep Guardiola wish he'd started his time at City with. I think if Claudio Bravo starts that game, then Burnley win. So no, he was fantastic, and I think one of the commentators on the American commentary anyway was saying Ederson looks like he could just stroll into the middle of the park and start playing there. Yeah, very, very impressive performance from him, and he's been pretty decent all season. Probably Liverpool game aside. Not much more to say than that. And it's a shame that he was so good against us.
Yeah, I think eventually he's probably going to make a mistake, though. There's only so many times you can play those short passes between yourself and your defenders when you've got strikers sniffing around before someone nicks it and puts it in the net. But he's sensational to watch. It's definitely not something I've seen before. But going from sensational to watch to just sensational, I think Raheem Sterling had the best opportunity of the game, including the goals, and he misses it. Dan, how do you think he managed to miss from 4 yards there?
I have no idea. You know what it reminded me of, and I tweeted a picture of it after the game, was Chris Awelmo's miss for Scotland against, I think it was Norway, and it's just right next. It's an open goal. And it's hard. It's one of those ones where it's harder to miss. And comical reaction by Sterling. He's like, it takes him a couple of seconds to realize he's missed, and then pounds the pitch like he's having a little tantrum. And then subbed shortly after that. You know, I enjoy it any time a player comes to Turf Moor and leaves unhappy. Raheem Sterling will have left the turf very unhappy on Saturday.
When you see that, you just don't understand how he's managed to score the number of goals he has, or how he justified his fee. I think I'd be pretty annoyed with myself if I'd missed that, and I'm definitely not anywhere near Premier League level when it comes to playing football. Most important thing maybe to talk about from the game then, the goal. It's a hell of a cross from Matt Lawton, and Goodmanson just comes onto it and does what he needs to, put it away, even though Ederson got a hand to it and almost made another great save to deny us, Dan. What did you think about the goal? Just one of those ones, I think, that as soon as Lawton hits it, you've got a feeling that could be the magic moment.
Yeah, no, I've sensed that goal coming. I really did. Like I said, like as long as it was 1-0, and just the way that we were pressing, like we were playing high up and we were pressing Manchester City, which can't really be understated. Yeah, great ball in by Lawton, just showed that he's going to add that spark to our attack. And Goodmanson getting a goal that he's deserved for a while now. He's just put in so many excellent performances on the wing to
not a lot of end product, but it was great to see him get on the sheet. And I think an Iceland shirt might be in my summer purchases as my adopted team for the summer.
I think Goodmanson he's been playing really well. I think, you know, we said it previous in the podcasts. He's done really well, obviously, to stay fit this season, and staying fit has probably been key. It's made a massive difference. Last thing from the Man City game, even though Natalie isn't here, she still managed to contribute a little bit. She tweeted a picture of Ben Mee tackling Bernardo Silva from the game, asking you to put your captions in. And I've picked my favourite from the many I got. So thanks, Natalie, for tagging me in that. And she did tell me to make sure I kept it on my radar, which was impossible not to do, considering all that is in my mentions from the weekend is people giving me captions. So the one I've picked is from Lee Burgess. He said, "You aren't getting in here with trainers on, pal." Pretty good. There was many along those sort of lines. So thanks for all your tweets. And I'm not sure whether Natalie will be doing that again in the future. Yeah, but there's probably not.
And just on that one, like an honourable credit to the official Burnley Twitter account today that has been tweeting out some fantastic memes and photoshops of that photograph. Well worth checking out if you haven't seen them already.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually. I did quite like the original when they did the Super Bowl one. Just fitted in quite nice, very topical. Decent work there. And obviously the photo's probably got mileage to pop up many times in the future. So quickly, just before we talk about the next game and close the podcast out, injuries. Obviously, Defoe, just before the Newcastle game, we heard was going to miss the rest of the season, needing knee surgery. They're really starting to stack up now, and with Bardsley getting injured on Saturday. Is it concerning, Dan, that we might not make it to the end of the season with enough people to put out a competitive first 11?
I'm not worried at all. I mean, they could feasibly be a thing where we're playing like players that you would just not ever see, you know, in the starting 11, never, you know, even on the bench. But we're at 36 points at the beginning of February. We need a draw and a win, and we're safe. And that's priority number one. And if we have terrible luck with injuries, I still think we can easily pull that off. So I'm. You know, that's goal number one, and I still think we'll achieve that even if we get into a bit more trouble with injuries. It's not good to see. I really wish we'd have got a few more reinforcements in January, but January is a very expensive time to get reinforcements. Yeah, it's one of those things. I'm not too worried about it.
Yeah, I think like you said, January is a tough window to be buying in. It's disappointing, but I'd say we're safe. It's just that it obviously be a little bit disappointing if it was injuries that were to stop our opportunity to cement a place in the top 10 and you know, complete the magical season. But it is what it is. Football's a tough game, and hopefully there's a few people who will be coming back soon. Stephen Ward obviously played today for the under-23s, so he's maybe not too far away, and that brings Charlie Taylor, you know, maybe coming out of the side, but he can play centre half, I believe. So there's maybe a little bit of flexibility, and there's a couple of people who can maybe play out of position, and I'm sure we'll manage to muddle on. So next game up is Swansea at the weekend. Other than I think the obvious one that Lawton's going to keep his place in the second half with Bardsley injured. Dan, do you make any changes to the side, or do you stick with the tried and true that did so well against City?
Yeah, he's not going to mess with that lineup, and nor should he. I would start with the side that started the second half. I'd keep the same formation, and I would say, boys, go show what you can do. You know, get creative, express yourselves, and this is the real target game. This is where we get back to winning ways. There's no excuse for not winning this one in my eyes.
Yeah, I think that was the last point I was going to make. Just to round it out on a very positive note, you know, surely this is the game where we get our win and put that winless run behind us, which I think it's been a bit unfair. I mean, you look back to some of the winless runs we've had over the last over my lifetime at least. Obviously, the Steve Cottrell one sticks out in the memory. The football back then wasn't really particularly exciting. I think if you look at the games where we've failed to win, there's been some really good games in there. There's been some games that, you know, we're very unlucky. Manchester United away, Liverpool, we were pretty hard done by to lose. And I think you look at all these games and you see the quality of opposition as well. And the fact that I think we probably went into that run in seventh and we finished that, at this point in that run, still in seventh, just shows how amazing this season's been, and also just how expectations have changed. Because if you'd said to people, we'd be disappointed that we've gone so long without a win, and we've played Spurs, Man United, Liverpool, Man City all in that spell, you probably would have laughed if someone had said that before the season. So
yeah, I mean,
it's definitely been
And obviously results matter, but so do performances. And so at this point, I've just seen Burnley pull out one of the best performances of this season, so that's why I'm not worried at all. If it was a winless run and we were just underwhelming the whole time, fine. But you look at the games we've played, and some of those results are results to be extremely proud of and gain momentum from. So really, the dream season is continuing for me, even though we haven't won in a good while. We've picked up points. We've picked up very, very hard points. Every point matters, and we will get that win against Swansea. I'm very confident of that.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things. It looks bad on paper, but if you've watched all those games, like Burnley fans will have done, and some members in the media, then you'll see that it's really not as bad as it looks. And I think that, just off the top of my head, the only performance I can think of in that spell that it was really disappointing was the Palace game. So beyond that, I think we've given a good account of ourselves in every game. Maybe there's a couple where, but if we'd been more efficient in front of goal, we would have taken all 3 points. But I don't think there's too much to grumble about, really, with where we are. So that's about all we've got time for this week on the podcast. We'll be back next week to talk about the Swansea game, which will hopefully, as we've just said, be the game that ends that run of games without a win. I've been James Bird. Massive thanks to Daniel Bentley and Andrew Greaves for joining me this week. I think Natalie will be back next week. It'll be a bit of an interesting podcast next week because I'm going to be recording it in the US. So hopefully I've seen the game on the Saturday, and we'll hopefully be talking about a win. In the meantime, make sure you check us out on social media, No Nay Never on Twitter, No Nay Never on Facebook. If you've got any thoughts, send us an email, podcast@nonaynever.net. And I look forward to doing another podcast for you next week.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.